නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, we are discussing several suttas in order to get some advice, some guidance from the Buddha's teaching. And nowadays we are actually discussing various suttas related to conceptual proliferation. In Pali it is called as papancha. And conceptual proliferation has become one of the great problem in our in the modern society as well as in the past society. Especially in the modern society, as we are getting more in contact with various devices, various communication devices, public media, social media, etc., etc. So our minds are getting overwhelmed by so much of information, and once we grasp all this information, we start to proliferate. We start to overthink about them. And ultimately, we even can become depressed, we become mentally agitated and excited, and maybe get lost in a dream world, and all sorts of such obsessive behaviors can happen. Now, Buddha's teaching actually helps us to reduce this mental proliferation, and Buddha mentioned actually. These mental proliferations are ranged or sort of spreaded to the extent of our faculties. Now, today's sutta actually explains that point very clearly, and we can understand that when we can hear something to that extent, actually we can think. Say, for example, if you are simply living in a small, say, village, there are no much of communication, and you are fairly isolated, then your world is quite limited, and you don't know much about what is happening other countries, what is happening in the other cities. You don't know what is happening in the entire world, and you might not know that what is happening in the other worlds. But on the other hand, if you have all the access, say through the internet, through WhatsApp, through Instagram, so much different apps, news channels, satellite systems, and all sorts of different media. And when you have all that access, to that level, your proliferation can widespread. Because how much of sense contact, or what's the range of sense contact that we are associating with, that actually determines the range of our proliferation. Say, for example, if we consider a small child, so who is not yet exposed to various contacts coming from the world, so his world is quite limited, and his range of vision is limited, his range of hearing is limited. He may only hear his mother's voice, father's voice, so likewise, a very limited experience is there, so his world is quite innocent and limited, and his mind also may wander, but in a very limited area. His mind also may dream, but in a very limited area. But on the other hand, as we are growing further, then we start to accumulate so much of things. We start to learn from our mother and father, and then we go to kindergarten and we learn colors, letters, etc. And then we go to the college, school, and we start to learn so much of different things. Suppose we are going to higher schools, then we are learning so much of things. And suppose that we are going to the university, then we are putting so much other things. So likewise, we are expanding our conceptual world, and so much of perceptions are now gathered, stored. And again, different types of, say, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations are now becoming more and more available to us. And as a result of that, the range of our thinking, how we are conditioned to think, what are our likes and dislikes, all sorts of things are now growing. So it has become overwhelmed, and now whenever we are thinking, all those different experiences that we have gathered are quite influencing, and we can't actually understand even why I am thinking like this. And internally there are so many other factors conditioning the mind so that we are thinking in that manner. And on the other hand, when we are reading newspapers on and say watching movies, watching teledramas, and maybe watching the news advertisements especially, so those advertisements, they know how to sort of condition our mind and how to develop certain traits in our minds. And as a result of that, once we go to a say supermarket, what we select is already conditioned, already decided by those what we have already seen through in our television. So likewise, our whole thinking has now fairly conditioned, even though I am the one say thinking, but it is someone else, many other conditions are really controlling that thinking. So suppose one is developing meditation, mindfulness, and was able to have some amount of peace of mind. Say he is able to develop anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. And as a result of that such development, suppose his mind now becomes fairly calm, and he is able to maintain his attention on breath for a long time. So at that time we can say, okay, this mental proliferation has fairly subsided. So there is a object of attention, and continuously we are paying our attention to that, that is the breath. And as a result of that, the wandering mind has become weaker, and our concentrated mind is becoming stronger. So as a result of that, this wandering mind, which is one representation of papancha, conceptual proliferation, has now become weaker, and so we may experience some amount of peace. And as we further continue, we may even observe various phenomena like feelings, perceptions, and if we are able to know how to tackle them properly without getting deluded by them, without attaching to them, without rejecting them, but properly being mindful about them, then slowly another side is also developing, that is the wisdom. First of all, we establish mindfulness, and that further helps to develop a necessary amount of concentration. With that mindfulness and concentration, now we are observing various phenomena. As a result of that, we start to understand their proper behavior or their actual behavior. So we can see things as they truly are. So now grasping reduce, attachment reduce. Now typically our minds are continuously attached to some sort of sensual phenomena, sensual objects like forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, and the mind objects. So that is continuously happening. But the meditation, especially vipassana, help us to minimize that grasping and to pay attention to a kind of selected phenomena like breath or various element characteristics, maybe feelings, various perceptions, etc. And when we are continuously doing that, so we are able to develop a fair amount of insights. So that leads to some kind of a dispassion. So it happens like it happens as a kind of in a causal manner. Say we have mindfulness, then we are developing concentration from that. With that we start to observe, this continuous observation, uninterrupted observation, impartial observation helps to have a good understanding. So this understanding leads to dispassion. So when the mind is becoming dispassionate, now it becomes less and less proliferation. So now mind is not that interested of going and attaching and grasping and then doing so much of conceptual proliferation. Rather, mind tends to stay quiet. Probably you might have experienced this. Suppose you are in a walking path. Previously, you need fair amount of effort to keep your attention on the foot. But now you were able to succeed in that. Now you are able to have good attention, and then you lead to have even understand element characteristics. Now it is not left, right, or lifting, moving, placing. Rather, now you understand all the very subtle aspects of different elements, like say weight, heaviness or lightness, then movement, vibrations, touching sensations, so etc. So those primary characteristics now you are able to understand, and then it leads to understand that how they are behaving, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how ungovernable they are. So likewise, these three universal characteristics become somewhat evident to us. As a result of that, now the mind become dispassionate. Things are available, but mind is not interested of looking at them or grasping them. Various sights are there, but mind is not interested of grasping them. They are there. And there are various sounds probably we hear, but mind is not interested of getting involved with them. Mind likes to mind its own business. Mind likes to stay quiet. Mind likes to be sort of secluded. There may be even smells, and mind is not interested of going and start a story. There may be various tastes, but still mind is quiet. There may be various tactile sensations, still mind is not interested of going and grasping them and maybe making a story. Rather, it likes to stay quiet. And there are certain thoughts also coming. They are weaker. They are not strong. They are not penetrating inside. So they come and go. Mind is not bothered. So this sort of a situation represents a developed amount of dispassion in one's mind. And again, developed amount of understanding, insight, knowledge in one's mind. So, and if we continue like this, then one can say, okay, the operation of eye temporarily cease. It doesn't mean that one become blind. Rather, typically in our eyes, the complete operation happens like a kind of a department, kind of a ayatana, what we call as a huge amount of work is going on. So it is seeing, and you don't stop at seeing. Rather, various characteristics are seen, and then you are trying to gather more and more characteristics, more and more specific characteristics. And as a result of that, you start to think, and you are actually recognizing, and then the various feelings happen. Then you start to think about them, and then you start more and more thinking, and ultimately you start continuing with the conceptual proliferation, and one becomes a victim of that conceptual proliferation, as we discuss in the Madhupindika Sutta. So this is the kind of typical behavior of our senses. We couldn't stop at just their mere recognition. Seeing is just seeing. Hearing is just hearing. Knowing is just knowing. So we couldn't stop at that level. So, but as we develop fair amount of insight, so we are able to gain that skill. So now seeing is there, but we could stop there. Now hearing is there, but we don't continue to conceptually proliferate on what we have heard. Maybe smells, tastes, and tactile sensations, thoughts are there, but mind is not involved, and we are not continuing with conceptual proliferation. Now we can say our senses are kind of stopped. They are typical behavior. They don't do this storytelling or story making, various constructions, fabrications. They have fairly stopped that. So there's a beautiful sutta called Loka Kama Guna Sutta. There Buddha mentioned, Chakkuncha nirujjati, rupa sanyacha virajjati, se ayatane veditabbe. So he mentioned the eye has ceased and forms, the signs of various forms, sights have faded away. And at that time there's another rising of different kind of an ayatana, kind of a, we can say a sense base. Similarly, sotancha nirujjati, saddha sanyacha virajjati, se ayatane veditabbe. And the function of ear starts to cease and the sounds start to fade away. The signs of various sounds start to fade away. Ghanancha nirujjati, gandha sanyacha virajjati. The nose start to cease, its function start to cease, and various smells, various signs of smells start to fade away. Jivhacha nirujjati, rasa sanyacha virajjati. So the tongue start to cease, its function start to cease, and various signs happen because of the tongue, because of various tastes, start to fade away. Kayancha nirujjati, pottabba sanyacha virajjati. The body start to cease and different perceptions coming through the tactile sensations start to fade away. Manancha nirujjati, dhamma sanyacha virajjati. Even the mind start to cease, it doesn't go through continual thinking, conceptual proliferation, and again the mental objects starts to fade away. So this represents the complete, what we can say, the cessation of six senses. And that is what actually highlighted in this sutta today, what I am trying to explain. In order to explain this sutta, this Kottita sutta, I have to explain this background information. And now Venerable Kottita is asking from Venerable Sariputta, after this cessation happened, that is, when the remainderless fading away and cessation of six base senses, six bases of contact. So six bases of contact means the both sides, that is eye and the form, then ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue and tastes, body and tactile sensations, and mind objects. So those are, as a group, we can call them as six bases for contact. So when these six bases for contact completely ceased, is there anything else? So this is the question asked by Venerable Kottita. So this is very philosophical and kind of a overthinking type of question. So actually we too ask this question. That is why these discussions are quite relevant today. And we too sometimes don't know what is the level of understanding or what is the limit of a typical intellectual understanding, sort of rationalization. So we start to think in many different ways, and we even ask questions where there are questions are invalid. We ask questions where conceptual proliferation becomes invalid. So this question is something like that. So when Venerable Kottita asked this question, when the remainderless fading away and cessation of six bases for contact completely cease, is there anything else? Then Venerable Sariputta answers as, don't say so. Don't ask like that. Then Venerable Kottita asked the opposite. That is, when remainderless fading away and cessation of the six bases for contact has happened, isn't there anything? Don't have anything. Is that the answer? Then rather than telling yes, Venerable Mahasariputta mentioned that don't ask. Don't ask that question. Do not say so, friend. And similarly, with the remainderless fading away and cessation of the six bases for contact, is there both something else and nothing else? So this is another way of asking, or the question, you can say the both sides. Something else is also there and nothing else is also there. Is it the answer? Then Venerable Sariputta again ask or remind, do not say so, friend. Then the fourth way, he is asking, once all this happened, this remainderless fading away and cessation of six bases or contact has happened, is neither something nor nothing. So that's is that the answer? Then similarly, Venerable Sariputta answer, don't say so, don't ask like that. Now actually we also go through some sort of a perplexity. So what is this? I mean, there should be some answer. But Venerable Sariputta continuously say, don't ask that like that. Now Venerable Kottita we can't say that he didn't understand, but he wanted to make a further clarification from Venerable Sariputta about his answer. Then he is again repeating the same thing and he is telling that, could you elaborate about your answer? Then Venerable Sariputta mentioned, friend, if one says, with the remainderless fading away and cessation of the six bases for contact, there is something else, that is the positive side. There is something else, if one say like that. Then Venerable Sariputta mentioned, one proliferates that which is not to be proliferated. So this is a very important point. So one proliferate, there is no way of proliferation. You can't proliferate while you are in this stage. It is not appropriate. The question is not valid. The question is baseless. So this is where actually we sometimes logically think, okay, something has to happen, either yes, either no, or even go beyond either yes and no both, or not yes, not no. So this is a typical four way of asking questions. You can see even that way of asking question is quite profound when we consider our typical digital yes no system. But the questioning also has more profound and more broader perspective when we consider even this question and answer. But on the other hand, Venerable Sariputta, all those four questions are denied. He say that your questions are not valid here. And this papancha, nippapancha and appapancha. Papancha is what we can say the conceptual proliferation, and then nippapancha is where we are able to completely calm down our mind and completely avoid any sort of conceptual proliferation. That is the nippapancha. And the term here used is appapancha. Appapancha means that it is not suitable to make any papancha. It is not suitable to make any conceptual proliferation. It is not valid. So something like that. And then after he explained the same explanation for all those four questions, where one proliferates that which is not to be proliferated, and then he mentioned a very interesting statement. Friend, as far as the range of the six bases for contact extends, just so far extends the range of proliferation. So as I mentioned in the very early minutes of this discussion, so to the range of our six bases for contact expands to that level, to that extent, the level of proliferation also expands. As I mentioned, a child has its own his own world, which is quite limited. His senses are not that matured and his experience is quite limited. So his range of proliferation is limited. But on the other hand, as we are growing, our range of proliferation become more and more greater and greater, because our senses are now capable of reaching far extent. We are able to see TV and understand various languages, reading, hearing, this and that. So as a result of that, through our senses, we are able to reach, far reach to, I mean, higher level. And as a result of that, our level of proliferation also increases. So this Venerable Sariputta's answer explains that. So Venerable Sariputta mentioned that the range of the six bases for contact is similar to the extent of the range of proliferation. As far as the range of proliferation extends, just so far extend the range of six bases for contact. So these two are quite similar in the range, because conceptual proliferation cannot happen when the sense bases are not active. So when they are ceased, there can't be any sort of conceptual proliferation. Actually, the cessation of all these sense bases are nothing but Nibbana. Salayatana Nirodha is a synonym for Nibbana. So the question, in other sense, what Mahavenerable Kottita asking is, when one is experiencing Nibbana, is there something else? So it is very much like someone is running far beyond the end point. Suppose that you are participating to a marathon or some sort of a long distance running, and suppose that you didn't figure out where the end point is, where the final place. You are continuously running. Or suppose there is a boatman who is rowing a boat on a river, but he couldn't recognize the port. He's continuously rowing. So something like that. So here, actually, the one has reached Nibbana, at least temporary, may not be the complete cessation of raga, dosa, moha, but at least temporary, one has reached some sort of a liberation, some sort of a freedom of the mind, where mind has stopped proliferation because of the cessation of senses and because of the fading away of their respective objects, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, etc. So when those are fairly faded away, so mind sort of stop, mind sort of avoid any sort of inner chatter, mind sort of avoid any kind of grasping, and again stop any kind of thinking, proliferation. So at that time, if one is trying to argue, is there anything more? Is there something else? Or isn't there something else? Or is both? There is something and there is something else. So likewise, I mean, if someone is trying to argue based on rational thinking or sort of logical thinking, reasoning or intellectualization on many different ways, then actually we didn't really understand the point of view that represent that we are in a simple kind of intellectualization rather than real realization. Nowadays people are more into that. So they haven't, say for example, say someone is writing a thesis about say swimming, but he hasn't even seen the sea or a river or a reservoir or a pond or even a pool. But he's writing a thesis on swimming. Something like that. So when someone is doing like that without any kind of practical knowledge, then it's very difficult to convince, and he may come up with so much of theories, intellectual logics, because the theory cannot reach the real practical experience. So the Buddha's teaching actually help us to have both. There is theoretical understanding, that is the Sutame Jnana, and there is again the practical understanding, that is the Bhavaname Jnana, experiential knowledge. So here actually Buddha, Venerable Sariputta, explains about that in a way. This discussion is very much like kind of an argument between theoretical understanding, theoretical arguments, logical reasoning, and the other side is very much like on real experiential knowledge. Once you achieve something, or once you are already dwelling in the experiential knowledge, so if we start to proliferate, if you start to question, if you start to have different kinds of doubts, then you can't really have the experience. You are deviated from the experience. And this actually happens sometimes. So various states are there in the vipassana practice. So once you reach that faded away state or the dispassionate state, so you simply have to dwell there. You can't expect to do something. Rather, you simply have to dwell. You have to just be. Without doing anything, without doing any kind of a construction. So typically when we see something, we tend to do something. We want to reach that what we have seen, we want to embrace what we have seen, we want to love what we have seen, we want to possess what we have seen, or we want to write a poem on what we have seen, or we want to make a picture of what we have seen. Suppose if we want to something we have heard, then we want to hear it again and again, we want to turn our ears to that, we want to memorize what we have heard, and we want to record what we have heard. So likewise, we want to do something. When one what we have heard, if we have tasted something good, then we want to buy that, and we want to bring it to our family, to our wife, to our children, to our mother, father, and we want to find out the recipe, we want to make it by ourselves. So we want to do something. So this doing behavior, we want to construct, we want to fabricate. So this is the sankhara, this is the operation of sankhara. But here actually Buddha points out kind of tranquilling these sankhara, calming down these formations. It is not merely the mental formations, and really once we do mental constructions, fabrications, that motivates the verbal constructions, vachi sankhara. It further motivates the bodily sankhara, bodily activations, kaya sankhara. So you can see the complete this constructing process, fabrication process, leads to fair amount of agitation. You can't now sit quietly, you can't now keep your mouth shut, you can't simply keep yourself quiet, silent. You need to talk, you need to have a discussion, you need to write a mail, you need to watch news, you want to do something. But in the practice, when all these things are calming down, and when all these different objects, sights, sounds, tastes, smells, etc. started to fade away, and there are no signs in the mind. When there are no signs in the mind, mind is not getting entangled with anything. Because signs are the ones promoting mental proliferation. Sanya nidana hi papancha sankha. So Buddha very beautifully mentioned in the Kalahavivada Sutta, Sanya nidana hi papancha sankha. So all these signs, marks, perceptions are the root cause of mental proliferation. Now, with the cessation of senses and the fading away of their corresponding sense objects, their signs of corresponding sense objects, that means the signs are now become less and less. Your mind become more and more clean, more and more clear. Typically, mind is sort of congested or filled with so much of signs. What we have seen is coming as various signs. What you have heard coming as various signs. What you have tasted, what you have experienced, always popping up in the mind as different mental signs appear like kind of scars. So we again and again give some value to that sign, and then we add some name to it, and we make it kind of live, and we attribute it to an individual, and then we may attach or we may even reject, we may fight. Say, for example, you are practicing Anapanasati and say your mind become calm, and after some time, suppose you start to visualize some sort of an image, and immediately you see, okay, this is a Buddha image, so beautiful. It may be the samadhi say statue in Anuradhapura. So I haven't gone there, I want to go there. So how can I go there? Now you start thinking, because you have given a value to that sign. You have attributed that sign to something conventional. You have given a lot of importance to that sign. Suppose your mind is calmed down, and at that time, suppose there's another sign. And immediately you give a sort of a value to it, name it as, okay, this is a kind of a passed away relative. Okay, my grandma. So now you are asking questions. Why grandma is coming right now? Is she in need of something? I mean, is she suffering from in a hell realm? Is she asking some merit? I want to do a dana ceremony. I want to do something. Now you start to think. Because we have given some emphasis to that sign. So in the practice, so all these are recognized as signs. And Buddha beautifully mentioned these signs, marks, perceptions are nothing but a mirage. Marijika upama sanya. So when you know that all these signs are nothing but a mirage, and you are not giving any value to them, you are not attributing any sort of a person to it, they are merely signs. So if you are able to look at like that, sanya virattasa na santi gantha, then Buddha mentioned, for the one who is dispassionate about these various signs, there is no any kind of mental entanglements. There is no any mental involvements. There are no any kind of mental fabrications, conceptual proliferations, because he is quite dispassionate about these signs, because he understood. It is not that he is lazy or sleepy or something. Rather, he understood that this is a mirage. There is no real essence to these signs. So here in this question, what Venerable Kottita is asking, that when all these signs have faded away and all the six senses have ceased, is there anything else? So appear like quite a philosophical question, but according to Venerable Sariputta, that we haven't understood the limit of our question. We haven't understood whether it is a valid question. So the question is invalid. Question is improper. And Venerable Sariputta further mentioned, with the remainder as fading away and cessation of the six bases for contact, there is the cessation of proliferation, the subsiding of proliferation. So you can see the sense activities, their grasping, their attachment, their, say, sort of communication with their corresponding objects, and the mental proliferation has a strong relationship. So therefore, on the other hand, we can sort of deduce inferentially that if we want to reduce mental proliferation, so guarding our senses is a must. Because if we allow our senses to operate as they like, and we also may be promoting because of various kinds of attachments and various kinds of thrills, pleasures, then actually we allow mental proliferation to grow. But on the other hand, if we are able to keep on guard on our senses without allowing them to grasp so much of things, without allowing them to go on and on grasping, tasting, seeing, hearing and all these things, then there is a little amount of control. We are not agitating the senses, we are not sort of bombarding the senses.
So as a result of that, one may experience inner peace. So that is why Indriya Samvara, sense restrainment, Buddha mentioned, helps to have kind of a peaceful mind. It is not yet completely eradicated defilements, but at least you are not agitating the senses, you are not stimulating the senses unnecessarily with some vicious objects. So that is why, say for example, if you are practicing 8 precepts, so there is a precept, the 6th precept is telling, or rather 7th precept is telling, Nacha Gita Vadita Visuka Dasana Mala Gandha Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusana Attana Veramani. So all these Nacha, different types of dancing, Gita, different types of singing, Vadita, different music, Visuka Dasana, different sort of sights, Mala Gandha Vilepana, so these different beautification and different strong smells, attractive smells, Vibhusanattana, different kind of augmentation, all these sorts of things are somewhat avoided. So it's a kind of a sense restrainment. So you are not now behaving or dealing with like a typical teenager, rather you are now behaving like a matured person who is trying to have some spiritual understanding. Kind of a restrainment. So Buddha's approach is therefore, we can say, not simply intellectual, it is also experiential, and again it has a fair amount of behavioral modification. It has a fair amount of restrainment through the body, through the senses. So if we are able to fulfill all these sorts of different aspects, then there's a quite possibility that you are able to fulfill the target or fulfill the aim. Because not only that you are intellectually understand things, rather you are experiencing them. And again, you are behaving in such a way so that it is quite conducive for the further development. So that is the point. So how we can approach in many different ways. One aspect is the sense restrainment, so that we are not allowing senses to behave in a more deluded manner, more vulnerable manner. And on the other hand, we are developing our mind through the meditation, through our developing the amount of concentration. And on top of that, we have the understanding, that is the insight knowledges. With those three, we can say as the Sila Samadhi Panya, that we are able to accomplish a kind of a silence of mind, a kind of an understanding of the mind, a knowledge of the mind, freedom of the mind. So this knowledge and freedom go hand in hand, which is actually the calming down of complete sense, this conceptual proliferation. So therefore, this discussion which Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahakottita is having is quite an eye-opener to ourselves, that how we have to behave in a way to minimize conceptual proliferation, and once we reach there, how again we have to behave. How much we should not entertain any kind of doubts, too much thinking, too much questioning, because at that time the questions are not valid. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon or Sutta teaching, and now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So for anyone that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand or you may send them via chat. So Bhante, I received a question. It's a bit long, so bear with me here.
Right.
Yeah?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Dear Bhante, walking practice, I have noticed that the walking practice is not as enjoyable as the sitting practice for me. When I start the walking practice, it is very haphazard and lots of thoughts come. Boredom settles in pretty quickly, as well as tiredness. After some time, the thoughts settle and the focus is more adjusted to the present. boredom and tiredness is somewhat gone and I can focus on the walking. However, I notice that my walking pace also slows down, sometimes to a point that it almost stops and my mind goes to a blank state as in the sitting. But I restart the walking, acknowledging that this is the walking practice and not the sitting. It is a forceful step. Once the walking restarts, it is smooth and calming, but my attention is in the whole process of walking and not specifically to any part of the sole or foot. I can continue for 1 hour at a time. When I do a sitting session after the walking, it helps to settle the mind quickly at the sitting since the body is more energized and it is easier to get the focus onto the body. Hence, I use the walking as a pre-step to the sitting and I do not see any progress or any change in the walking practice over time. Please advise if my practice is correct. Any guidance is much appreciated with metta.
Yeah, I mean, it is good that if I can question the writer, if you can raise your hand if he is in this crowd, that is much better. So, anyway, I mean, what you are experiencing is quite valid, and what you have experienced in the sitting is now going to be available in the walking. Say, in the sitting, so you are experiencing that sort of mind is not grasping anything and there is no thoughts and kind of a blank state. And similar thing can happen in the walking as well. So now, when it happens, you should not force yourself to pay attention to what you are feeling or what you are experiencing. Rather, you should allow your mind in that non-grasping state, because it may be difficult actually when you are sitting, the environment is fairly stable and you are not moving your body and you are closing your eyes, and therefore what you experience is quite able to sustain for a while. Say you are able to maintain it for 30 minutes without any grasping, without associating anything. But when you are continuing a walking practice, you may be able to reach the same level, but you can't maintain it for a long time because mind go and grasp something very quickly. So actually at that time the mindfulness will show you, okay, the fellow have gone and grasped something, and at that time it's a matter of applying your insight knowledge, applying your wisdom, and simply release the mind. So this grasping and showing it, or we recognizing that grasping and then applying wisdom and releasing it. So this is the most important part. Dwelling simply in this concentrated, say non-grasping state, simply has some sort of a peaceful abiding. But other than that, the cutting through of the defilements and the weakening of the defilements only happens when we understand during that walking session that the mind has grasped something and we got to release it. So that is the process, actually further diluting the defilements, further weakening the defilements and ultimately uprooting the defilements. So we have to allow mind to grasp if it requires to grasp, and then we are observing it, recognizing it, and then we simply letting it go so that we are again come back or returned back to the non-grasping. So therefore, as far as the question is mentioned, so I understood like you are able to do this, and if you are able to do this in the walking session, that is much better. So if you didn't get the answer, you can raise your hand, then we can have a good conversation.
Thank you, Bhante. Then I'd like to invite Ratika to please ask your question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Bhante, I have a question, and first I want to thank you for your talk today. It was very relevant to me.
Right.
If I reach this state, only if I'm at a retreat, in other words, when I have a longer meditation session and a very rigid or a very controlled environment, then I will get a very peaceful state, and maybe at the most what I see is the cessation, or very rarely this once, but or just one, only one factor is active. Say I'm with the breath only and all the others are not active, or I'm with sound and all the others are not active. Now, I don't know what I did to get to this stage, but then when I come home and when I do it, a different thing, because of course I don't do that many meditations in a day. I will just do it for 1 hour, my walking and sitting, maybe half an hour walking and 1 hour sitting. Then it gets very calm, but I will fall asleep. Or I go, I don't know when I'm falling asleep, because sometimes I'm not, but it's very subtle, the breath is very subtle, very, very subtle. Then I don't feel it, and then I'm just there. But sometimes I can't remember what has happened. While before I can say, oh, I'm just with sound only, or I'm just with the breath, I can see that I'm only with the breath and I'm aware. So I start questioning, just like how you say, and trying to think what I did, what was the difference. So I'm doing that. So I know now that I shouldn't do that, but I'm not doing that in the middle of the meditation. I'm doing it after meditation. Now, why did I fall asleep, or why did I go like this where I can't remember, where I'm not as alert? So what do you suggest that I do when I'm practicing for a lesser time as opposed to a longer time? But then I can remain there for a longer time.
So basically this represents a little weaker mindfulness, because you are able to attain some sort of a samadhi, mind becomes somewhat concentrated. At that time, the knowing part or the awakening part is less. As a result of that, you don't know what has happened. You are feeling like unconscious. So this represents the mindfulness is weaker. So best option I suggest is to improve further your walking path or walking practice, because walking really helps to further improve our mindfulness and again the clear comprehension. You are able to clearly know what is going on because your eyes are open and you are in a open environment. It is unlikely that you fall asleep, so therefore your mind is somewhat active. As a result of that, you can further refine your mindfulness, further refine your clear comprehension. So with that developed mindfulness and clear comprehension, you can come to the sitting session. So at that time, if you experience some sort of cessation or some sort of non-grasping kind of state, you may be able to maintain your attention there. Attention in the sense, you may be able to aware of that rather than falling asleep. Because, you know, our minds can keep awake when mind has some sort of agitation. So, say for example, when your eyes are watching a very adventurous movie, you can't sleep. When you are listening to some noisy music, then you can't sleep. You can't become drowsy. Your mind become agitated. So likewise, all these gross kind of objects, sense impingements, make our mind quite active, agitated, excited, then we can't sleep. But on the other hand, when that corresponding objects are quite weaker, soft, and again quite soothing, probably there's a possibility that our mind can feel lethargic, feel drowsy, and then ultimately can fall asleep. Like a very soft music, very bored kind of a sight. So those are quite boring, and then mind go to sleep. Similarly, if there is nothing to grasp, if all the senses are quite, in a way we can say, inactive, and all the corresponding objects, sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations and mental objects have faded away, then one possibility is that you might fall asleep. So in order to avoid that, actually we need to improve mindfulness. Mindfulness is this kind of refuge here. So we should have very subtle, refined kind of mindfulness. And mindfulness, we can say, is similar to awakefulness. So mind's awakened nature is determined by the level of mindfulness. So therefore, you better improve your walking session maybe to 1 hour, then probably you can reduce, if you don't have enough time to continue 1 hour sitting session, probably you can reduce to that to half an hour, because there the mind is more tense towards the concentration. But in the walking path, walking session, your mind is improving mindfulness and wisdom.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's
Sanai. Okay, Bhante. The next question that I received, thank you for explaining Sankara. Could you also explain the difference between Sankara and Gati, as in Citta, Viti in Abhidhamma?
Sankara and Gati. What is the spelling mentioned, Jennifer?
For Gati? G-A-T-H-I.
Gati. I don't know what you really mean, Gati. So probably you are referring sort of traits then. So Gati, the kind of a Sinhala term is there. And again, the Pali term is also there. And probably one can say kind of traits, kind of trends in one's mind. So actually, trends or traits are very much like hidden, and they are latent, and they are being sort of latent does not mean that they are not there. They are available. But time to time, due to various conditions, due to various reasons, they pop up. They become active. So when they become active, we can say they manifest as different kinds of sankhara. Say, sankhara of vachi sankhara, that is verbal constructs, mind sankhara, or the what you call mental formations, like mano sankhara, then bodily formations, that is the kaya sankhara. So the manifestation of traits, manifestation of latent tendencies, we can say as these three kinds of sankhara. Yeah, back to you.
Thank you,
Bhante. So I'd like to invite
Don
to please ask the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for your time on this time today. I like to say that I really have benefited this the series of the Prapancha talk, and it's together with my walking and sitting meditation, this has really helped this teaching of Prapancha for me to see. I thought of sharing one experience that I had on Monday.
Right.
Yes. I actually, out of my normal daily cycle, I had to attend a wedding of one of my close family member. And after the wedding, I realized yesterday and today, even during my meditation, my mind is keep coming a lot of Prapancha, and I'm still trying to live into that. Rather, my mind is like to going into that. Yeah. Then I realized, yeah, this is exactly the Dhamma talk today. I mean, our series, that even though I can see that and I can also stop that, but nevertheless, I still saw a little difference in my mind going through Prapancha than before. Yeah, I just wanted to share that experience.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, this is what happened, that when we are involved with sort of too much conversation, too much chattering, and that kind of involvement really further sort of, enhance or improves the Prapancha. So this so then it is again difficult to calm down the mind, because we, in that sense, we can understand the importance of the sense restraint. So that is why, say for example, when you attending to a retreat, then that is where they are instructed that don't continue your conversations, don't talk, don't continue any kind of idle chattering, because that leads to reduce your attention, reduce your concentration, reduce your wisdom, mindfulness, and promotes prapancha. Because once you sit, what you memorize, what you hear, or what comes to the mind is what you have talked, what you have chatted with another person. So likewise, our behavior really matters on our practice. So if we are able to sort of maintain a conducive type of behavior, then it really helps. So your experience is quite valid. And when we are involved with too much discussions, when we are involved with too much idle chattering, so it really yes. has a big influence on our practice. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Sure. Very good.
I believe that's the last question that's received, Bhante.
Okay. It seems that they are sympathetic to you because you have to sleep early. Okay. Then we have spent about 1 hour. And we have almost concluded several suttas discussing related to conceptual proliferation. So with that, we can then conclude today's sutta teaching session. We'll share all these merits with all the past away relatives, all celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. Let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam Akasattha cha bummattha devanaga mahiddika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam Akasattha cha bummattha devanaga mahiddika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu